This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the original $189 window company, America's number one replacement window company. You can find them online in our area at windowworldstlouis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, and Ian Geis here with me, and Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
Good. Here's how devoted Colin is to this portion of the show. It's his day off.
Look at that.
Which tells me he hates the news and loves the showbiz. Because he's not here to do the newscast. Jessica's doing those. But you're here to do the talk about movies and TV.
I wouldn't miss it, Paul.
I appreciate that. And
of
you,
course.
You also have a couple of friends here because
it's Bring Your Friend to Work Day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And because we don't have friends, we never do that. But Colin has friends and brought a couple in with him. And the three of you just went to an escape room.
Yeah.
What is that?
So they literally have a little story they tell you. In this case, it was about a secret society, and they drop you in a room, set you in there, close the door, and there's a series of puzzles. There's a little note on the table, and you have to find your way out of the room by unlocking these different puzzles. And every time you solve something, it opens something else to solve until at the end of the hour, you're finally able to either answer the last question or you lose and you're stuck in there forever.
Where is this?
This one is in downtown on 4th Street. Mastermind Escape Rooms is where we went. They've got several different types of rooms.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them in the St. Louis area.
Yeah.
Yeah, these just popped up, what, the last 5 years, maybe?
Yeah, probably even more recently than that in St. Louis. But there's several of them. We enjoyed this a lot. It was all of our first time.
Is it one person alone in a room?
No, it's a group of up to like 8 or 10 or 12, depending on the size of room. We just did it, the three of us, and we won with 5 minutes to spare.
What do you mean you won? What does that mean?
We solved it. We gave them the final answer, and we escaped the room with 5 minutes left.
Does everybody else get to leave when you leave?
No, this room has like a 21% solve rate, so the three of us left because we were the only ones in there. But sometimes people don't solve it, so you pay this money to try and solve all these puzzles, and sometimes you can't do it because it's tricky. It's not easy. And you've got to go with a group of people that we will have fun with, or you get along well with, or just some really smart people, I guess.
Right here, we're encountering what I consider to be a possible problem area for me, which is I'm going to go, let's say I went with my daughter.
Yeah.
And it's the two of us, and we go in there, and there's a group of 8. Now, I got to rely on these other 6 people to try to figure stuff out.
And that would be tricky, I would think.
Unless, of course, they've done other escape rooms and they know all the tricks and can show me what's going on, right?
Yeah, and I think we sort of lucked out because it was the middle of a day Friday and most people are working. So we were alone in there. But there's still, they do these rooms and they've got 4 of them or 5 of them. They do them every hour. So they're staggered throughout the day.
Could you have come out of the room that you escaped from and gone right into another one?
Possibly, but I had to come here and do a interview with you.
For other people who are not as devoted to the show as you are.
And you, they're not walk-up. You have to reserve them just so they know who's going to be there. They'd hate to turn people away. So you have to reserve them. But you could reserve back-to-back rooms if you wanted. No reason not to.
You're not doing this in the dark, are you?
No, it was this one was dimly lit, but that's because we had to. It worked in the ambiance. I don't want to give anything away because it's a lot of fun to go in there not knowing anything.
What does it cost?
This was like $26 a person. Perfectly worth it, though. Yeah.
Doesn't sound bad.
And at the very end, to get out of the room, is there a guy standing there asking you what the air velocity speed of an African swallow is?
Wasn't quite that tricky, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, how do you prove that you've solved everything so that they'll let you out of the room?
In this one, we had to fill something out that had answers that we had discovered along the way.
Uh-huh.
And if we didn't fill it out right, I don't know what would have happened. I guess we'd have just sat in there for the last 5 minutes while we stewed in our wrongness. But we got it right, so.
Stewing in your own wrongness.
So it's almost like a life video game, almost, to get through.
Well, I think that's how these started, didn't they? With online?
Yeah.
They were, you would be in a, you know, it was just to be a website with a room and it had puzzles on. I think that's where it originated.
Man, so they made it real life, and they're constantly working. This place is going to have a Cardinals room opening in the next week.
Wow.
So something Cardinals themed.
Okay.
That's fun.
Cool.
Yeah, not for kids. Like, not for 5-year-olds. needs to be adults sorting this out. Yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise, they wouldn't help.
All right.
Just trample.
Let's get to the movies. I know you and I were both at the screening earlier this week of this new movie with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner called Arrival. I'll let you describe it, and then we'll get into it.
The premise for Arrival is fairly simple. It's an alien invasion movie. However,
and there's always however in life.
It's not anything like the rest of the alien invasion movies you have seen. Instead of this being an apocalypse where the aliens are going to come and invade, what happens is one day a dozen disc-shaped, these gigantic disc-shaped ships.
More like half an egg.
Yeah. They called them something. I just can't remember what it was. It was like sliver or shell or something.
Shells. Yes.
They show up, and not around populated cities necessarily. They just randomly stop.
The one in the U.S. is in Montana.
Yeah, it's not near anything. It's in the middle of a field. There's one over the Indian Ocean. But they just show up.
Here's what we learned from this movie. Aliens don't have Google Maps.
I wonder if it was intentional, and we'll sort of talk about that when we talk
maybe
about
maybe they
the
landed
more.
Over the Indian Ocean because they found that MH370 plane.
Is it a true story?
Is it a true story? No,
based,
Dan.
Based on
a true story. Mork and Mindy.
That was an entire egg.
With yeah, oh, that's
this
right.
is a half egg.
Oh, okay.
It's a spinoff.
Okay.
So these shells land, and people aren't quite certain what to think of them. The governments of the world immediately descend on them, and this is where we find out why our main character is important in this. Our main character in this is Amy Adams. She plays a linguist, and Forrest Whitaker is with the Army and shows up and says, "We know you're the best. You've done work with us translating before. We need your help with this. We need to find a way to communicate with these aliens." So Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, who's a theoretical physicist, are shipped off to the shell in Montana, where they have to discover how to communicate with these aliens.
Now, let me just stop you right there.
I don't want to give much more of the plot away, really.
I'm certainly not going to spoil anything, although I will say I was very happy that in this movie, the aliens don't look like us.
Yes.
Remember when you saw Close Encounters, and at the end, the aliens finally come out of the ship, and they hold hands and touch people, and they bring Richard Dreyfuss up on the ship? Those were aliens who had two legs, two arms, and two big eyes on the front of their head. Why we assume that life elsewhere in the universe would be like that, all you have to do is look out your window and you can see all sorts of other non-human life that does not look anything like us, like, oh, I don't know, a tree, for instance. And in this movie, they don't look anything like us. I'm not going to give away what they do look like, but to me, that's a good thing. Anything you can imagine could be the shape of an alien. It normally goes to that biped with the big almond-like eyes that are always open. That's not what these guys look like, and that's good. I also like the fact that this movie did not get into the aliens are attacking us in an American city. Because this was the first alien attack movie I can remember seeing that did not have a taxi cab flipping up in the air after an explosion.
Yes, exactly.
They all have that cliche shot in them. So it's good that this one took place in Montana. You also, of course, have the authorities in the form of Forrest Whitaker as Colonel Weber and Michael Stuhlbarg as a guy from the CIA. They are representing the part of the government that looks at these things as aliens who must be destroyed because we don't know what their intention is. And so the first reaction, not only here in the U.S., but in Russia and China and India and everywhere else around the world is get the military out there because we've never seen an alien movie before in which the military was completely ineffective. This time, we're going to get those aliens, and we're going to take them down. You don't have that, although I think people who go see this movie might be expecting Independence Day. And it's a little bit more Close Encounters, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've talked about this. Captain Fantastic had a horrible name. The Accountant had horrible marketing. This has not very good marketing as well, because I think if you just sort of glance at it superficially and think, oh, alien invasion, this is really more of a think piece than anything else.
It's not called Invasion. It's called Arrival for a reason.
And the best science fiction, what it does is it instead sort of turns the lens not on, oh, let's find out everything we can about these aliens or this, you know, robot, whatever it's going to be. It instead says, let's sort of examine how humans would react, because change the window dressing. People are people still, and that's what's interesting to see, is they can put you in a situation in a science fiction movie that you couldn't in any other genre. So it's interesting to see how they take this idea. And again, nothing is on a small scale. It's not as if this is from the day the Earth stood still and a UFO lands and it's, mm-hmm. you know, the size of a bus.
Mm-hmm.
These are gigantic ships that are threatening, mm-hmm. and people should likely be scared. We would be scared of that.
But I really like the aspect of this in which Amy Adams as Louise and Jeremy Renner as Ian, they are brought to the ship, which opens its door once every 18 hours so that humans can come in and so they can try to have some sort of communication. And there's that first shot where they're brought up to this ship, and Jeremy Renner, who's in essentially a hazmat spacesuit, he reaches up with his rubber glove and he touches the outside of the spaceship, and there's a shot of his face like, this is so cool,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly how a scientist would approach this. It's like that moment of discovery as you're looking at this and having this encounter with whatever the heck we're going to encounter here. I really like the way that they did that, as opposed to the get your guns out. We're gonna be attacked here any second now. I like that. Now, I do have to admit something about this movie. I did not understand the first 15 minutes until I thought about it for several days and had a discussion with somebody else who had also been at the screening. In that way, it was kind of like the ending of the original 2001, where you walk out of the theater or you turn off the mm-hmm. TV at the end of it and you go, what the hell was that? I had a what the hell was that moment. Did you? Or did you understand it when we left the theater that night?
I think the best way to put it is that it stuck with me. Is the movie wasn't something that I went and watched, and by the time I was home, I'd forgotten about. It stuck with me, and I liked that, because unlike something that's disposable and you watch it, like in Independence Day or pick them. But this is something that I think if you were to watch it now and in a year, it's something that you would take something different from the movie, or maybe look at it a slightly different way, or interpret the characters' actions, their motivations slightly differently, depending on where you were in life. Or if you went to watch this with a 20-year-old, a 40-year-old, and a 60-year-old, I think they would have very different takes on the decisions the characters made. So I will say this. I think it made sense at the time, but I think my thoughts of how the characters acted has changed in the week that since I've seen it.
I like the science bending aspects of this, and I'm using that word on purpose because it has to do with the way things are going here without my giving anything away. I like that. I like that it didn't devolve into a special effects space battle on Earth. That's all good. But I think a lot of people who go see this, and you tell me if it's going to do big box office in a second, but I think a lot of people who go see this are going to walk out of there and be a little bit freaked out by what happens towards the end, in that they're not going to have an answer for whatever questions there were as the movie went along. Am I being confusing enough in my description of what's happening here?
I think that's fair to say, and I think it's important to realize that with a movie like this is a good opportunity to remind people that the summer blockbusters are behind us, and mm-hmm. it's probably not the time to go look for those. This is awards season, so you're going to see movies that fit that bill, and this does, which is again odd to say about a science fiction movie. You're seeing something where I think, hopefully, if the Academy can sort out what's going on, Amy Adams gives a great performance.
Oh, she's really, really good.
Jeremy Renner is sort of a fun, he's not comic relief, because I think that cheapens what he does, but he feels like a real character.
Because I think it's his best performance since The Town.
Poor Jeremy Renner. Hawkeye has killed him. Like, being Hawkeye in The Avengers has killed him, because that's bad. He was very good in Hurt Locker, which is a movie I didn't think, I didn't care a lot for Hurt Locker, but I thought he was great in it. He was very good in The Town. He was good in The Bourne Legacy. It was just mm-hmm. a so-so movie.
Yep.
It's just Hawkeye is what he's known for. This is gorgeously shot. There are going to be a few shots in here that are just, it's pretty, it sets a stage nicely. It's very well made, and it's an award season movie, which is odd to say about science fiction.
The director, I think his name is pronounced Denis Villeneuve.
Yes, we were looking at this earlier. I'll agree with that.
He made a movie last year that I did not like at all called Sicario, but he also made a movie about 3 years ago that I loved called Prisoners,
yes,
which only 8 people saw, but it was still a terrific, terrific piece of movie making. How will Arrival do at the box office this weekend?
That's tough to say. I think a good number is probably about $20 million, but we'll have to wait and see.
Is that good on a movie that cost about $45 or $50 million, which this did?
Yeah, because it's going to have good international appeal. There's nothing about this that's specifically American that turns other people off.
Mm-hmm. And there's one part of this movie, I won't give away, that will guarantee it gets played in one certain country.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
And so I think it's going to have long legs. Interstellar is a great example of this. Interstellar didn't crush at the box office like other Christopher Nolan films do. That has been immensely successful in the streaming market and the digital downloads. So
this to me is closer to Gravity in that it's a human story than Interstellar, which was a bad story.
Oh, I liked Interstellar.
I know. You and I disagree on that. What do you give Arrival on a scale of 10?
I gave it an 8 out of 10. This was one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
All right. I gave it a 7.5, only because I think the ending doesn't quite work.
That's fair.
The way they expected it to. The other movie that's opening up this weekend in limited release, which means it'll be playing in the art theaters here in St. Louis, like the Tivoli and Plaza Frontenac, is a movie called Moonlight. Now, there's an enormous amount of buzz about this movie. People are already talking about it being up for multiple Academy Awards, and I kind of have to be a little bit careful about my review of this movie, because it's the first movie I've ever seen that is the coming of age of a young, gay, black man. You ever seen a movie about a young, gay, black man where he was the central character?
Mm.
I haven't either. So the movie is told in 3 chapters. As a young boy, when he's just known as Little, and as a shy, scrawny kid who lives in a housing project in Miami. He's got a single mom who's a crackhead, and he's bullied by other boys until he's discovered outside an apartment building. He doesn't want to go back in because mom's freaking out. He's discovered by a local drug dealer who's played by Marshala Ali, who was in House of Cards. He was Kevin Spacey's right-hand man in House of Cards and then ended up being a lobbyist who worked. If you watch the show, you know who he is. And he's very, very good as this drug dealer who lets the boy come and spend the night at his house with his girlfriend, with the drug dealer's girlfriend. Little, the young black boy, goes home the next day, but the drug dealer and his girlfriend kind of become his surrogate parents. They teach him how to swim in the ocean. They let him spend the night when mom is too whacked on crack, and all that is very, very good. That's the first chapter of the movie. The second chapter of the movie is this kid as a teenager. He's not called Little anymore now. He's called Chiron, and he's still being bullied by bigger, tougher classmates, and he really only has one childhood friend, a guy by the name of Kevin, who sticks by him, and one night they sit on a deserted beach, and they share a joint, and they share a physical encounter, which is Chiron's first time with a guy. And by the next day, his feelings have been obviously changed. But Kevin turns against him at the urging of these homophobic bullies at school. That's the center part of this. And then in the movie's third chapter, Chiron is now known as Black. It's all the same character. But now he's older, and he's living in Atlanta. And he is also a drug dealer now. Successful at it, but he's very lonely. And one day he gets a surprise phone call from his old childhood friend, Kevin, which takes you to the resolution of the movie. Okay, those are all interesting things to talk about, but the movie takes way too long to show them to you and explain them to you. The performances are all good, and the plot, I guess, in that way is groundbreaking in that we haven't seen this story on the screen before, in much the same way we hadn't seen anything like Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal in Brokeback Mountain before that movie came out. But as I said, it takes way too long to tell the story. And although this movie is getting all that Oscar buzz and a lot of other critics are raving about it and calling it the best movie of the year, it didn't do it for me. I only give it a 5 out of 10. Not because of the subject matter, but because of the way the story is told and the fact that at a certain point, you don't really care
And that's Moonlight,
anymore.
You said?
Moonlight is the name of it. Hmm. You're going to hear a lot of buzz about this movie, just not from me. I really can't recommend it. It's only so-so. So we'll take a break after that, and we'll come back and talk some more showbiz stuff in just a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geis, Colin Jeffrey. Talking about showbiz today. Before we get to some other items from Hollywood and movies and TV, how about, Dan, give a plug to where you and the Upside Down Band are playing this weekend.
Ah, we're playing at the Firehouse Bar and Grill on Lehman Ferry.
He doesn't even correct me.
Not anymore. He's given up.
It's been 4 years. I'm getting the name of the band wrong.
He likes getting that name out there.
The Southside Johnny Band.
When are you changing it to the Upside Down Band?
I don't know. We probably should at some point.
You should.
Because I've had some people come up to us, and people have they put a picture of us on Facebook upside down. They said the Upside Down Band.
Perfect.
I know. So the Southside Johnny Band, we're playing at the Firehouse Bar and Grill tomorrow night starting at 8 o'clock. Good food. I recommend the pretzel bites. They are awesome.
Okay. So, Colin, have you ever heard of a movie being written off by its studio before it even comes out?
Yeah, they've done this a couple times fairly recently. They did it with Seventh Son, that was a Viking movie with Jeff Daniels that came out last year. They held on to it for 2 years, and they just said, you know what, we know we're going to lose all the money on this, but this is that creative Hollywood accounting garbage.
Right.
They write it off to, you know, Tommy's movies, and that company has no money, so it just goes into, yeah.
I think ridiculous. One of the most famous write-offs in Hollywood history was The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp a couple of years
ago.
But Walt Disney actually released that, and then they lost $190 million and had to write that off.
I was just talking about that movie with a friend of mine today.
Did you see it?
No, I did not see it because I've heard nothing but bad things about it, and he said he actually enjoyed it. So,
he's the one who saw it.
Yeah, he's the one that saw it, and he enjoyed it.
Well, there's a movie coming out next year, just a couple of months, in fact, January 13th, that Paramount has already announced they are writing off $115 million on this movie. It's a movie called Monster Trucks.
Oh, yeah, it was his 2 or 3-year-old son helped him come up with this movie.
That's correct.
Yeah. Because that's who you want to turn to for a movie.
Because that's the demographic we're looking for in the movie business now. 2, 3, 4-year-old kids. They don't see enough movies.
Is Bigfoot in this?
I don't know. Maybe. Now, when I heard this, I thought, well, Monster Trucks, maybe that's like Pixar's Cars, but with Monster Trucks. It'll be an animated thing, and maybe it'll appeal to exactly that demographic. If that's the movie I would make if a 4-year-old gave me an idea for a movie about Monster Trucks, I'd make an animated movie, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Nope, they're making a live-action movie with mostly people you've never heard of, except for Rob Lowe, Amy Ryan, Danny Glover, and a few other people whose faces you would recognize if you saw them, even if you didn't know their names. But Paramount already, it's 2 months before the release, Paramount says, okay, just write this one off. You know, you and I have discussed when movies come out in January and February.
Means they're garbage.
Yeah. There's a reason. there's a reason why they got released then, not in October, November, December, or held for the spring and summer.
Yeah, that's when I have to see Norm of the North and Fifth Wave and Kung Fu Panda this year. Those were January and February.
They should release that movie on Sunday.
That's a very good idea.
Instead of on Friday.
Well, I have a good idea for you, Colin. When it comes time for us to divvy up the movies we're seeing in January, you take Monster Trucks.
Yeah, I'll be on that.
What else do we have here? Sorry to hear today about the death of Robert Vaughn of acute leukemia at the age of 83. If you don't know who he was, those of us who were around when the Man from U.N.C.L.E. TV series was on will remember him from that show. I posted something about this online today, and somebody wrote back, I guess Channel D is closed, which you'd only understand if you had seen that TV show. But he was also the last of the original Magnificent Seven
to die.
He was in that movie. He was in Bullet. He was in The Towering Inferno. He was in Superman 3 with Christopher Reeve and Richard Pryor. He was on a TV series out of England for about 8 years that ran on cable here called Hustle. He played FDR in a TV movie. This is a guy who did his first movie, I'm sorry, his first TV show in 1955 and was still working this year. In fact, there's a movie coming out. It's on the festival circuit now. There's a movie coming out probably next spring called Gold Star, in which he plays the father of the woman who stars in the movie, a writer, director, actress named Victoria Negri. He plays her father in the movie. She's a high school kid when her much older father suffers a stroke, leaving him wheelchair-bound and unable to speak. Now, how'd you like that? You're 82, 83 years old, and your agent calls you up and says, "Hey, Robert, good news for you. I got a great gig for you. This up-and-coming filmmaker wants you in her movie." "Oh, great. What's the part? Do I have to learn a lot of lines?" "No, actually, you don't have to learn any lines. You will not have any lines in this." But he's in it and shot the film over 10 days. I listened to an interview he did recently with Scott Feinberg of The Hollywood Reporter on Scott Feinberg's podcast. It's a great listen. I'm going to put a link to it up on my website, harrisonline.com. And as soon as you listen to it, you'll recognize his voice. If you've ever seen him in anything, he's got a very distinctive voice. And he says that playing that role was very compelling for him. And he says, "You know what? I've been doing this for over 60 years. I'm happy to have work." So I looked him up on IMDb. This guy has been in 226 different movies and TV shows, many of them three and four a year. That's an amazingly long career for an actor. Robert Vaughn, dead today at the age of 83. One other thing I want to mention is the people at the Big Bang Theory are going to have a little dilemma after this season. It is still the number one comedy on TV, but everybody's contracts are going to be up after this season. And they have to figure out, how much will it cost us to keep Jim Parsons and Johnny Galecki and Katie Cuoco and all the rest of them, plus the whole production team? How much does CBS want to continue to pay for this show? And can they get TBS to chip in a little bit? Because TBS reruns it about 400 times a week. Meanwhile, the producers of The Big Bang Theory are working on a spinoff.
Yep. Called, I saw this.
Called Sheldon, which would be about a 12-year-old version of Sheldon Cooper, the Jim Parsons character. Just an idea right now. There's no script yet, but they're working towards that.
I think that's a mistake.
Yes.
I think so, too.
That's Jim Parsons that makes that character.
Correct.
Not that character.
Correct. It's one of those times when you should say, "You know what? We've had a show on the air for 10 years. Let it go."
Exactly.
Go back and look at After MASH. Remember that disaster? Now, I know you can take a successful long-running show like Cheers and spin off Frasier and have that run for another 10 years, but that doesn't happen all the time. Most of the time, these spinoffs end up being Joni Loves Chachi and going,
"What was wrong with that?" Just kidding.
Yeah. Anything else you got in the showbiz world you want to mention?
Yeah, I don't know if you watched South Park, but they had to do something they've never done before. They had to rewrite an episode.
Why?
Because they had an episode written for this Wednesday, and then the election happened.
Oh,
and they had
man.
To rewrite it. And I don't know if you've been watching, but again, they've had Mr. Garrison on the show, who put on lots of fake tan and a wig, and he was the giant douche, and Hillary Clinton was the turd sandwich. They brought them back, and they were running against one another, and they had to rewrite this week's episode Wednesday.
Oh, hold on a second. Explain this to me, because this thing wasn't done until 2 o'clock our time. Well, I guess that's midnight in Hollywood. What time does South Park go on? Like 9 o'clock on Wednesday night, right?
9 Central, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it went on. They're notorious for it. They start on Thursday, and on Tuesday they typically have a final episode.
Yeah, but you could do that with a live show.
You can tell this week the new scenes they put in. It's worth going to watch. There's not the same amount of background, and there's a few scenes when it's zoomed very much in on a character's face.
Because that animated show usually takes...
Well, they do it in a week.
But not in 18 hours.
No, so this was quite the feat. And as a result, I honestly think the censors might have loosened up, because they got two words through that have never been said on anything less than premium cable without being censored. So I don't know if the censors were just like, "We're done too," and they threw their hands up, or what happened?
Well, now, wait a second. I don't know what the words are, but I've heard stuff on Sam B's show on TBS and on several FX shows. That's not premium cable.
One of them starts with a C.
Okay.
And so
does it have to do with my ex-wife?
Probably. Yeah, okay. So they got that through, and this was
my wife, the car.
No, that was my mother, the car.
That's car with two R's.
That was my mother, the car.
Oh, my mother, the car. Sorry. Yeah. My references were off.
Yes.
Wow.
So it was, but I've liked this season because it's been more political than they've been in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode worked. It captured the sense of hopelessness I think those two felt. Maybe, and it reflected it very much in that episode, and then to just sort of be a part of something, watching that happening so quickly, that's neat. I mean, that's why live television is fun, in part, because you're not quite certain what's going to happen. This was them trying at the 11th hour to put something together that still doesn't break the show.
That's remarkable that they could do it that quickly.
And they did. And you should, even if you're not up on South Park, you should still watch this week's episode because it's cartoon characters reacting to a real world event, and that's fun.
How long have they been doing that show?
This is season number 20, I believe.
Wow.
20 or 21.
And do Parker and Stone still do every episode?
Yep. And they're working on they're finishing up a video game right now. And they're writing Tony Award-winning musicals.
Yeah, I was going to say, they did Book of Mormon in that time. Uh-huh. They did a couple of movies in that time. That's remarkable. 20 years of the same guys doing the same show and continuing to do it going forward.
Yeah, I think they signed him for, I think, at least a couple more seasons.
Because, you know, the Simpsons creative team just signed on to go to season number 30.
Huh. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's 20 too many.
Wow.
I agree. I stopped watching it about season 8.
Yes, exactly.
See you next Tuesday, Colin.
You know what? You know what? I have not seen the show in so long, I couldn't tell you if it's good now.
But nobody, I mean, you don't hear anybody talking about watching that show
anymore.
There's
no buzz.
There's no pop culture references anymore where you'll see a viral thing from, you know, because that's how most of the things happen nowadays that make... keep something popular, and you just never hear that.
All right, we got to go because Colin has to get ready to listen to the news at the top of the hour that somebody else is doing because it's his day off. I'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Paul.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.